It's Financial Freedom Friday, and on this episode of the Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks podcast, we are going to cover the passive investors' top three of 2023.
Hey Mavericks, this is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to the Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks podcast, where we provide you with actionable steps to grow your passive income and become job optional. It's Financial Freedom Friday, and I'm here with Neil Timmons. During this episode, you are going to learn about the top three of 2023. For those of you who are new, I'm your host, Ava Baukamp, and I love to educate investors about passive income from real estate. Before I open up today's episode, I want to ask you for a small favor. If you like what you're hearing, please give us a thumbs up and subscribe to the show so that you never miss a valuable episode. And if you love what you're hearing, please give us a written review. Also, be sure to take a look at the description of this episode, as we have it packed with thousands of dollars in free resources. All right, Neil, we're just about to the end of 2023, and we've got a great top three to cover today.
I'm excited. This is going to be fun to go through, to dive into these top three, and certainly everybody's touched on these or interacted with what we're going to cover today in one way or shape or form.
Yeah, that's great. So we'll just get right into it. You could call it the top three headlines or news pieces or things that happened during the year. But our first top three is interest rates and the Fed funds rate. So rewind in your mind back to March of 2022, and the Fed target was just about zero. It was 0.25 to half a percentage point. In March of 2023, we were up to 4.75. And we went steadily up until July of this year to where we're at now, which is 5.25 to 5.5. And CBRE, I thought this was interesting, is forecasting an average 10-year yield for 2025 to 2028 of 3.3. And we already had the Fed announcement that they're not going to be raising rates anymore. And in fact, they even indicated a possibility of three cuts going into next year. So, Neil, what are your thoughts? And we want to hear what you're thinking about in terms of interest rates and what this all meant for 2023.
Yeah, for those of us who borrow fixed rate debt, I mean, it's positive to hear that, yes, that rates are going to come down. And it also is indicative that inflation is falling. What I found to be interesting is, to me, it seems like maybe they think they've overrun it a little bit, because inflation's still at or around 4, midge over that. The target's 2. And so I'm not sure how they think they're going from 4 to 2 with 3 rate cuts next year. So it'll be interesting to see what, certainly they have a stance, and what they say does dramatic things. The day they made that announcement, the stock market was up 1.5%. It closed that day at the highest it's ever closed. The market's up a tremendous amount this year, both the Dow Jones and the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is up north of 20% as we record this. Just incredible to think that interest rates have moved so hard so fast, and yet the broader markets didn't make a dent at all. In fact, it went the opposite way. So where are my eyes? Is certainly they've signaled that. They've openly spoken about it and said three rate cuts next year. So there is an expectation in the marketplace. So it'll be interesting to see what actually takes place, what plays out, and how the data comes in on the inflation side, because that is the largest thing they're looking for as it relates to their interest rates.
So just talking about interest rates, I'd be curious to hear, I think everyone was expecting lots of maturities in 2023. We hear a lot about distressed debt, and TREP reports that roughly $2.75 trillion worth of loans, commercial loans, are set to mature between this year and into 2027. That's roughly half of all outstanding loans. How do you think this possible shift with interest rates will impact that wave of maturities?
I think for somebody who's up on a maturity, they don't have any sort of underlying default or problem making their payments. I think they're going to run normal. They're just going to be faced with a new set of economic circumstances, and they're going to have to make a decision. For some of those, it's going to mean refinance and their numbers work. For some, it's refinance and the numbers don't work, which means they're writing a check to keep their property. And for others, the numbers are just not that attractive, and it will mean they're going to sell their property. For those who are in a level of distress and they have to look for a workout of some nature with their lender, I suspect their lender is going to see light at the end of the tunnel based on what the Fed has signaled, and they're going to kick the can down the road as far as they can. I think one of the things that bankers as a whole learned as a result of 2008 was if you wait long enough, everything just comes back A-okay. And on the backside of 2008, it came back with a vengeance in terms of how positive things moved to go from, you know, we were in 2008, 9, 10, even in 11, 12, where things were terrible, to, you know, last 3-4 years. I mean, the highest highs we've ever seen. So bankers got to keep that in mind. I think they kicked the can down the road with some of that.
Any last thoughts on interest rates for 2023?
For 2023, it's interest rates are a large factor, and it's not just interest rates that have moved, it's the bank's margin on interest rates. So imagine, let's just say a bank prices their debt on the basis of a five-year treasury. It's the five-year treasury plus a spread. And what we saw in 2023 in comparison to previous years is that bank's spread widened. In many cases, I've seen it from what would have been in 22 or 21, bank spread would have been 175 to about 205, 210, somewhere in that range. And in 2023, it's about 275 to 300 basis points, meaning 3% over that. So yes, interest rates have moved, but so has the bank margin has moved. And that's accounting for almost one full percentage point, I'm rounding, but almost one full percentage point when it comes to borrowers like us and commercial borrowers placing debt.
That's a great nugget for passive investors. The Fed funds rate is not the only item at play here. It's not the only number in the equation. Banks are looking at things a little bit differently, and they're adding a little extra padding. They're more risk averse. And so there's a lot more nuance to it than just the Fed funds rate. So that is some great insight. Well, speaking of banks, our top two of three for 2023 is bank failures. So I'm going to quickly run through the bank failures for 2023, and then we'll go from there. So first up is SVB, Silicon Valley Bank. They had about $209 billion in assets. Signature Bank, $110 billion in assets. First Republic, $229 billion in assets. Heartland Tri-State Bank of Kansas, $139 million, and Citizens Bank in Iowa for $66 million. So over $500 billion in assets from banks that failed this year. Not sure this is a fun fact, but there have been 568 bank failures in the U.S. since 2000. That's almost 25 bank failures per year. So Neil, give us your thoughts on what these bank failures meant for 2023.
Well, they've got what it meant was tremendous headlines and a whole lot of scared people. And I suspect on the backside of this, you'll see some insurance, the FDIC insurance, to go back to the drawing board. And if rates fall, things stabilize, they're going to go back to the drawing board and go, okay, how do we now need to resolve that? What needs to happen on the insurance side? Here are a whole lot of people in certainly SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, something like 80% or 90%+ of the deposits were uninsured. Meaning that when you cross over $250,000, which for a lot of banks, especially out in California. I mean, that's where it was. It wasn't individuals. It was businesses. A lot of businesses crossing that threshold, having uninsured deposits. Comes real scary real quick. The Fed, FDIC, stepped in and said, hey, we're going to insure all deposits. When the challenge, of course, and the, what that signals everybody is, okay, well, they're going to back it up, but that only has a backstop of so long. Would they do the same thing in Citizens Bank in Iowa at 66 million? Not the same political pull between those two. And so I think they'll go back, rework, come out with some new things. I wouldn't be shocked to see the 250,000 number rise. I also think that means insurance costs is going to have to increase. And so what does that mean for us? What we're getting paid on deposits shrinks a little because the bank is going to have to send some more money into the FDIC. Those are the biggest things structurally, that and how they account for some of the liquidity. Silicon Valley Bank had assets. It wasn't the fact that they didn't have assets. It's that they had it in their bond portfolio, didn't have the liquidity. And if you have to go realize what they did in their bond portfolio with this hardness, fast as interest rates moved, you have to realize a loss because interest rates moved against their bet. And so I think there's probably some reworking the regulators are going to do on that side of things to either create some additional liquidity or handle the reporting requirements a little differently for banks. Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever-changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com.
I thought this was interesting. I mentioned the information of how many bank failures there have been. In the year 2000, there were 8,315 commercial banks. And by the end of 2020, there were only 4,379. So with increased regulations, thinking about post-2008 and potentially after some of the bank failures this year, do you see additional pressure with regional banks, community banks? And a lot of those regional and community banks have a large amount of commercial real estate debt on their balance sheet. How do you see that all?
Yeah, additional consolidation. What happened on the backside of 08 was tremendous amount of increased regulation. And to a small bank, what that means is overhead. How do they keep up with that versus make up the name? A Wells Fargo, for example, Wells Fargo can absorb it, but to have the same levels of regulation and the increased levels of regulation associated with a small bank, it can be crushing to them. And as a result, you saw that since 2000 to today is just consolidation. You saw that really on the backside of 08, tremendous amount of consolidation. And I suspect you'll continue to see that take place.
What do you think that means for the commercial real estate world, especially for investors who have worked with a lot of community banks? Do you see any issues or just things to be aware of there?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. There are some states, such as Iowa, that have a tremendous amount of community banks. That is the backbone of the banking industry. And so, although I see consolidation, a place like Iowa, I don't see this changing anytime soon to where all of a sudden these locals and regionals go away. I think they're still the go-to choice. A lot of places like the huge banks don't like dipping down to do the size of the projects that take place in Iowa, right? They can stay on the coast in some of the major cities, the tier one cities through the country, and they can get a lot done because they can work very aggressively on big dollars. But kind of these $5 to $10 to $15, $20 million deals, the locals and the regionals are the backbone to get those things done.
So make sure you're maintaining those relationships
no doubt.
With your lenders.
Yes.
All right. We are into our third and final top three of 2023, which is inflation and the stock market. We kind of talked about this right at the top of the episode, but I found this interesting. 2 years of inflation reported by CNBC. So comparing costs of items from 2021 to where they're at now in 2023. Costs of essential goods like groceries, utilities, and gas increased by 20% or more. And the cost of all items on the CPI increased by 13% in those 2 years. The cost of groceries is up by almost 20%. The worst, which was eggs and butter. Airfare is up by 36%. Hotels by 31%. I think we're still... I mean, I still notice that sticker shock when I'm at the grocery. Mm-hmm. We're all still feeling the effects of inflation, but then you hear talk of Soft landing, hard landing, nobody seems to really know exactly what's around the corner. What do you think this all meant for 2023 and how that ties in with the recent Fed announcement?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you saw is a lot of sticker shock. And what you also heard was shrinkflation, right? The companies all would come up with going, all right, well, the price is going to stay the same. You just get less. We just repurpose, repackage a box. The number of ounces you get in your cereal box comes down. And they just figured out how to make it more palatable for everybody. And I suspect increased their bottom line along the way. There was a lot of that has taken place. Everybody's prices are going up across the board. And if you're a company, you see that and you see an opportunity to take advantage of it. That's what took place. Advantage took place as well. The historical, this was proven in the 80s. The number one reason that inflation occurred and continued to go up is because people believed it would continue to go up. They believed that prices were going to rise. It wasn't the reality of it. Prices rose because people believed they were going to rise. Therefore, the people who run the businesses would increase the prices to account for what they thought was going to be increased inputs, the costs of them doing business. So to get ahead of it, that's what they did. And so I think some of that is today is the Fed's positioning and to go, all right, we think we're near the end or we're at the end. We think we're going to hit this soft landing. And I would be the first one to be blown away if they actually pull it off because they don't do anything very eloquently.
How, just explain maybe or give some insight. We've been hearing that we're in a down market, that inflation's rampant, that things are bad, bad, bad. And then the stock market just goes crazy after the Fed announcement. Is there any logic there? Is it all just too much heat, too much emotion? What's the reasoning behind that crazy spike?
I think that I've said for a year, this is the longest running anticipated correction that has yet to materialize. Although inflation's up, yes, lots of things, but unemployment still very weak, meaning employment's very strong. And so you just have not seen it materialize in layoffs. You heard this earlier in the year, a bunch of the big tech firms would lay off 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people at a time. And I've heard from a bunch of people who are in the tech world, who are in the employment side of the tech world, to say that's absolutely true. Microsoft and Facebook, a whole bunch of people laid off a bunch of people, but there's all tons of companies who are hiring. And so the average tech person's out of business, out of work for like a matter of days or weeks. Like there are that many options for them to go get placed back with another company. So some of this, it doesn't have to do with a broader perspective of hiring. It has to do with a more narrow perspective of hiring instead of a single company and what load, how many people they actually need to facilitate their business.
So we've talked a lot about some macro things here with inflation, bank failures, interest rates. Can you maybe give us some closing thoughts about how all of these macro trends give us insight into being a savvy commercial real estate investor?
Well, I think it does a couple of things. And you and I talk about this a lot. It's about building your investment thesis, right? And making a decision there. As it relates to my perspective is, it's like, good. It looks like things are headed down a positive path based on what the Fed has signaled, but proceed with caution. I'm still going to be into fixed rate debt because we don't know what it's going to materialize. One thing to be mindful of is we have an election in about 11 months. So are some of their actions based on the fact that we have an election in 11 months? Or is it really all data driven based on the economics and what inflation is actually signaling? Maybe a little both. And so proceed with caution. And for us, that just means put proper debt on things, invest, buy properties with strong tenants that we think, even if things aren't all that rosy, if things do churn and there is a recession that materializes, is this tenant going to be able to survive that? So I want to have an understanding of that to be able to proceed forward. And I think as it relates to a limited partner standpoint, it's understanding or forming a belief of where you think you're going to go. And asking the questions to a general partner, if you're evaluating an opportunity, it's what do they see the world? How do they see the world? Where do they think things are headed? And what have they planned for? For you and I talk about this a lot. So we can identify some of the things that could go wrong. If we can plan and risk mitigate for the things that could go wrong, the upside tends to just take care of itself. It's make sure that you can build a strong fortress, if you will, and then it becomes much easier to thrive in that environment.
Yeah, definitely. All right. That wraps it up on our top three of 2023: interest rates and the Fed funds rate, number two, bank failures, number three, inflation and the stock market. Come back next week for our next Financial Freedom Friday, where we give you our predictions for 2024.
To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.